We are live on a Tuesday here at Arrowhead. We are chopping it up live and proud. Brad, I've gotten so many emails since last week when you unveiled that song. No, that is not me. That's not my song. It's not an original. Come on, Chiefs, let's chop it up. Brad, give some history. Wasn't that something we used on game day this year? First off, Brad Young's with me as always. He doesn't just produce this show. Brad Young helps produce your game day experience at Arrowhead. Some of that music that goes in, Brad Young plays a hand in. And he took this from, I guess, game day in 2009, right?
Game day, a lot of people probably hear that from when they introduce war paint. A guy out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, actually produced that for us. He's a family friend, or he might actually be a cousin of a guy that works in our video department.
Fans professional musician.
Fans love it.
Let's chop it up.
No one loves it as much as Josh.
I love that song.
Welcome back, Josh. How was your weekend?
It was great. Long, extended MLK weekend. It was enjoyable, and but there was still football to be had, Brad. Still football. Did you watch any of the games? A lot of blowouts.
That's all I did this weekend.
That's all you did. You sat back and watched.
Sat back and watched football.
Probably like most of the NFL viewing public. Did you have a favorite game? Because really, I got to say, I was kind of disappointed. I like some close playoff games, lots of blowouts. I guess your closest game was that Charger game where Kading misses the field goal to pull it in between one score, but and it finished up 3 points down, but you still need the onside kick. I guess that's as close as you got.
Well, those two games on Saturday were snooze fests. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough if you're Arizona.
Wait, hang on. Go back. You just said that the two games on Saturday were snooze fests?
Yes.
And what did the Cowboys play on?
Sunday.
Oh, phew. I thought for 1 second you were saying that Brett Favre was boring.
No.
Okay. Yeah. I want to make sure that you're not an anti-Favre guy.
No, not even close. But a lot of people, I don't know, I was kind of surprised with how the Saints came out and they played defense against Arizona, and Indianapolis did what they did. But, both of those games are kind of boring. I mean, they got out of hand real early. But I did love, obviously, I love seeing Favre play like Favre does. But the Jets, how about that game?
The Jets?
Did that surprise you?
John and, says you have to onside kick in that situation. Yeah, I'm aware.
I don't know about that, John.
I don't know about John. Low on timeouts. I think you got an onside kick there at the end of that Jets game.
I think they had two timeouts.
They had one timeout and a two-minute warning. One timeout and a two-minute warning.
If you kick it deep, say the Jets go three.
The Jets did what we knew they were going to do. They're going to run the ball and get a first down in the game. I think you had to try the onside kick. I agree with John and cover it live right here. Anyway, what do I know? Let's see. I went 1-3 in the first week in wild card. How'd I do this week, Brad? My picks. Round. Was it better?
Let's take a look right here. You could obviously, fans at home can see the matchups and all this stuff. Let's go ahead and see what Josh picked. It looked like he had Arizona in the upset in the other one, and then he took the three home teams, the Colts, Vikings, and then the Chargers. Actually went 2-for-2 this week. It's not bad.
Not bad. See, marked improvement. First quarter of the season, I go 1-3. Second quarter, I go 2-2. Now, there's two games this weekend. I got to go 2-0. Well, let's go one by one, man. Just looking at the Cardinals and their defense and the Saints, just my one thought on that game is you saw the Cardinals that have allowed the most points ever by an NFL team in their first two playoff games or through two playoff games. With their beat-up secondary, which you don't want to have a beat-up secondary when you go up against Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints, do you think maybe the Cardinals could have done a little bit more ball control offensively? Sometimes your best defense is your offense, and I didn't see them doing that. They were chucking and doing their whole thing, or did they get – it's because they got behind so early and they couldn't do it.
Well, it was tough because I knew for Arizona to be close in this game, they're going to have to run the ball. And first or second play of the game, Tim Hightower breaks off like a 70-yard run. I was like, ooh,
yeah,
here we go. Because the Saints' D has been suspect all year.
After that Hightower run, 31 yards total on the ground for the Cardinals, and you're not going to win games doing that very often. So
Not with the Saints' D and playing like they are. Darren Sharper, Jonathan Vilma, all those guys. If Drew Brees gives them a 2 or 3 touchdown lead, those guys are going to get after the passer, and those safeties are going to sit back and just play ball hawk.
Okay,
that's
game
exactly
two,
what happened.
Game two, Ravens-Colts. The Ravens were who we thought they were, right?
Yeah,
a lot of defense, not much offense.
Well, with Indianapolis scoring, I guess Indianapolis didn't go too crazy scoring, but they basically shut down their running game, which the week before they ran all over the team. The week before,
when you
make Joe Flacco try to beat you through the air, and obviously they couldn't.
Hey, so the Ravens held Peyton Manning at 30 of 44 for like 230. That's actually pretty pedestrian for Peyton Manning. So
it's true, but And we'll get into this as we talk about next week's picks. Indianapolis, you know, their leading rusher was Joseph Addai. 11 carries, 23 yards. And when you're making Peyton Manning throw the ball 44 times a game, it's a very one-dimensional team. Yeah, they're in the AFC Championship game. Yeah, it is Peyton Manning. But it'll be interesting to see how that Rex Ryan-Peyton Manning matchup comes, because one-dimensional teams don't beat the New York Jets, just like you saw in San Diego.
Hey, the Jets aren't flashy, but the Jets do one thing right. They run the ball. What's the other thing they do right? They've got a really good defense. If you can run the ball and you can play defense, you're going to win a lot of games in the NFL, and the Jets are proving that. In fact, this is the first time ever, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the first time ever that two rookie head coaches have squared off for the Lamar Hunt Trophy, the AFC Championship game. It's the Jets and the Colts. Now, obviously, the Colts and their head coaches, takeover for Tony Dungy, and the Jets are a little different situation.
I forget that Jim Caldwell is a rookie head
right.
coach.
He's a guy that you'd forget is Jim Caldwell. Yeah, yeah. But he's a rookie head coach off that promotion when Dungy retired, and then obviously Ryan came in after Mangini of the Jets. So that's pretty good testament to both of those franchises. Very well-deserved. We'll get to those Jets in a minute, because this Jets team is basically – it's their first AFC Championship game since 1998, which is basically that 98 staff is pretty much your Kansas City Chiefs staff right now in 2010. We'll look at that in a second. Let's recap Vikings-Cowboys. What do you think, man?
Brett Favre is Brett Favre.
Now, how about Sidney Rice?
Sidney Rice blown it up too, but that first go pattern that they had up against the sideline. I'm fans, if you guys watch the game, you know what I'm talking about. Your jaw probably dropped like mine. When Favre just cocked back and hurled it downfield, the Sidney Rice, not even breaking stride, just hit him in stride for the first touchdown of the game. And then after I saw that pass, I was like, this is playoff Brett Favre. This is vintage Brett Favre. Wade Phillips and his fight in Dallas. Cowboys are going to be in for a long day.
Well, yeah, you look at that. I wanted to go on this later. We might as well touch it now. Image is everything. Wade Phillips, North Turner, two guys where you have to come out and say after their seasons end, they'll be here next year. Both of them, North Turner signs the extension, and Wade Phillips gets the vote of confidence, the go today from Jerry Jones saying he will return next year. Those guys shouldn't even be up for debate, in my opinion. It should not be.
Jobs, I think it's a little ridiculous.
Their job should not be debatable. But you've got two guys who aren't real sexy media guys, but they just go out and win. Really, Wade Phillips, that's all he's done in Dallas is win. They had a little hiccup there last year, but he's won. North Turner. They got rid of Marty because he couldn't win the big game. At some point, once you get to the playoffs, it's a whole new tournament. This is the NFL. This is anybody's game. Your whole job is to field the best team possible and go into the playoffs playing your best football of the season. North Turner taking a lot of heat today and yesterday. But guess what? He did that. The Chargers won 11 in a row. They finished 13-3. They got the home field advantage, the bye. North Turner did everything he could this year as head coach, and the Jets beat him at their place in the game, in one game. And that's the way it decides in the playoffs, and that's just the way it is. So to me, when you've got a coach going 13-3, and you've got Wade Phillips taking away the ghost of the past in December, and Dallas winning some big games down the stretch, those coaches are doing a damn good job. And to me, and the way we are moving in the NFL, it's really surprising to me where you can have guys like that job status on the line. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
And as a Chiefs fan too, it's got to be frustrating. You know, like if you're San Diego and you're complaining because you're winning 12 games. I mean, they won 14 games this year. They won 13 games. They're going to the playoffs with a bye and they lose. I think they've learned really quickly that I guess Chiefs fans realize that, wow, you know, looks like San Diego, wow, you guys in Dallas have it so rough. You're winning 10, 12 games a year, yet you're finding something to complain about.
Exactly.
And, you know, in our position, if any Chiefs fans out there would just give about anything to win 10, 11, 13 games a year and then feel like they have to get rid of the coach after that. I think it's fans looking for somebody to blame,
yep.
Which I would, in that situation, I wouldn't blame everybody. I would just give credit to the New York Jets and that and the
right here.
Minnesota Vikings.
It's all right here, man. The 98 Jets media guy, right here. 1998, last time the Jets were in the AFC Championship game, 1998. We had guys in here in Cover Live talking about Romeo Crennel. When will he be on the next show? Well, Romeo Crennel's in here. Romeo Crennel was part of that 98 Jets staff. And like a lot of the guys I'm about to read off, he's now part of the Kansas City Chiefs. We will have Romeo eventually do something with us on the website. Right now he's coaching the East-West game. Then he's got to get here and learn his personnel. So he's got a lot of things to do that trump kcchiefs.com right now. But Romeo will eventually we'll get something up on the web for you guys with him. And we're, just like all Chiefs fans here in the building, extremely excited for Romeo Crennel to join. But 1998 Jets season, let's recap that year. Do you guys remember they're coming off the 9-7 year? So 39th season of the team. But they go 12-4 under the second season of Bill Parcells as head coach. It's their first division title since the merger in 1970. They also earned their first-round bye, given to two division winners with the best records. Obviously, they defeated Jacksonville in the divisional round. And then they tried to make it to their first Super Bowl in 30 years when, of course, they fell short to a guy we all love to hate and know very well, John Elway, the Denver Broncos. So 1998, the last time the New York Jets were in the AFC Championship game playing for the Lamar Hunt Trophy. Well, you open up the Holy Grail of football, the 1998 Jets media guide. And I'm just going to flip through the pages right now and read off the names. Director of Player Personnel, Dick Haley. Oh, there's your father of your head coach right now, Chiefs fans. Your Director of Pro Personnel, that would be your general manager now, Scott Pioli. Flip a page again. Bill Belichick, we all know who he is. He's now with the Chiefs, but he was an assistant coach. Other assistant coaches, running backs coach. That would be your associate head coach and running backs coach in Kansas City, Maurice Carthon. Romeo Crennel, defensive line coach of the 1998 New York Jets. He's now your 2010 Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator. Al Groh, there's another name we all know, non-associate Chiefs. Todd Haley, the offensive assistant quality control coach of the Jets in 1998. Todd Haley now, your head coach of your 2010 Kansas City Chiefs. You keep flipping through the pages. Bill Muir, offensive line coach. Your offensive line coach for the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs. Eric Mangini's in there. Charlie Weiss, offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach, 1998 New York Jets. Your offensive coordinator for the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs. You can keep on going right down the line. Your trainer, David Price, trainer for your 2010 Kansas City Chiefs. Anthony Pleasant, assistant defensive line coach last year. He was a player on that team. Dedrick Ward last year was a wide receivers coach. He was a player on the team. And there was one more player on the team I'd have to flip through. The point is that 1998 Jets team is basically your 2010 Kansas City Chiefs coach staff. So when people start calling the Chiefs New England West, you got to dig a little bit far. That's a little shallow. Yeah, a lot of those guys stopped in New England on the way. But really, it's the Bill Parcells coaching tree, not the Bill Belichick coaching tree. And a lot of it originated in the 90s with the Giants, with the Jets. And for Romeo Crennel, it goes way back to Texas Tech in 1970 when he was serving as an assistant on that team. So there you go. The 1998 New York Jets equal the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs. And, hey, hopefully that 2010 squad can lead the Chiefs to some playoff victories as we go forward. Speaking about more coaches, there is a former head coach in the college ranks, in the NFL ranks, and a former offensive coordinator for your Kansas City Chiefs the last 2 years, headed into 2009, and in 2008 he was here. Chan Gailey reports he will be named at about 1 o'clock today, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Could not be happier for Chan Gailey. Awesome guy. I think he's going to make a fine coach in Buffalo. Would you agree, Brad? Fine coach.
I completely agree. I mean, we had an opportunity to work with Chan last year. One of the nicest guys. One of the nicest guys in coaching, but, you know, he's been there. He's done
that. I would describe him as
been there, done that, been to playoffs, been to bowl games. At every level that he's been, he's won. Great hire for the Bills.
I would describe Chan Gailey as one of the nicest people you said that we worked with, but at the same time, one of the most serious, one of the most X's and O guys. And if there's any Bills fans out there, you guys are getting a great head coach with Chan Gailey. He didn't exit Kansas City because of performance. It was philosophical stuff. We talked about it. Haley wanted to implement his system. He made the switch there. Thought it was best for the team. So it was one of the hardest things he's ever had to do because Gailey and Haley don't run the same system. And the Chiefs go through 16 games. That now Charlie Weiss is here to build upon the Chiefs offense that was implemented in 2009. But Chan Gailey reportedly going to the Buffalo Bills. I think he'll be an excellent hire. He'll be an excellent head coach. Jerry Jones in Dallas said one of his biggest mistakes ever was firing Chan Gailey. You remember what happened with Dave Campo following Chan Gailey. And Chan Gailey did a great job kind of cleaning up after Barry Switzer left town in Dallas. And he's had some tough jobs. He got fired from Georgia Tech after good season after good season. They just couldn't beat Georgia, and they couldn't get to the BCS games that the administration won each time. So he was very successful at Georgia Tech. And I think that Chan Gailey will build a very good staff in Buffalo. And who knows? The thoughts that come to my head, will you see Tyler Thigpen in a Buffalo Bills jersey? I don't know. You might see Mike Vick, because he's a lot like Tyler Thigpen, because that pistol, to me, can work with Fred Jackson. We saw Fred Jackson this year, along with Beast Mode Marshawn Lynch, who's fallen a bit out of favor in Buffalo. But Fred Jackson in a backfield with a pistol-type quarterback like a Mike Vick or even a Thigpen could be very, very dangerous. And the Bills do – don't they come to Arrowhead once again next year, Brad? Is that right?
Possibly. It seems like they come every year.
Yeah, I think they're coming again. Or we're going there. One of the two.
It's one of the two because I know since we finished fourth in the AFC West.
Check KCChiefs.com for next year's opponents. Yeah, I don't have them memorized yet. I'm almost positive that Chan Gailey and the Buffalo Bills will be in town at Arrowhead to take on Todd Haley and the Chiefs. Moving on to Chiefs talk now. We've covered the playoffs. We've covered Chan Gailey. Let's talk awards week on KCChiefs.com. We unveiled them a bit yesterday. There was three overall awards that were unarguable to me. Offensive Player of the Year, Jamal Charles. Breakout Player of the Year, Jamal Charles. Rookie of the Year, Ryan Succop. Well, I posted the other ones, got some feedback. Not everybody agrees. First off, Role Player of the Year, Wade Smith was my vote. We all know what he did. He's like the utility man of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's the baseball guy, the utility infielder that's never supposed to be in the starting lineup, but finds his way into the starting lineup nearly every single game of the season. He started 9 games for the Chiefs, played two different positions along the offensive front, can also snap. He played left tackle, for goodness sakes. He played left tackle, he can play guard, he can play sitter. This guy does it all. He might even be your most valuable offensive lineman. We'll get to that. I didn't give him that nod, but I gave him Role Player of the Year. Nobody served a better role on this team than Wade Smith. There wasn't a ton of argument. Here's where the arguments came. I said Defensive Player of the Year, Brandon Flowers. The Tomba Hall Lee crowd came at me, Brad Young. And that's no knock on Tomba. Tomba had an excellent season. I wanted to make a point, though, that there's more than just sacks. Because we'll talk about Tyson Jackson in a minute making Pro Football Weekly's all-rookie team. Jackson didn't have any sacks, right? How could he get a rookie honor? We'll talk about that in a minute. But Tomba Hall Lee, 8.5 sacks, a career high, was instrumental on the Chiefs defense. But overall, down to down, to me, I feel like Brandon Flowers, each snap, is the best defender on the field for the Chiefs, and that's why I gave it to him. He also had career highs and team highs in interceptions and passes defense, so it's not like he didn't have a great year either. But to me, as a whole, as a product, I gave it to Brandon Flowers. Just feel like he's the best defender overall on this team. He had a heck of a hard time, especially late in the season when the Chiefs are struggling at stopping the run. They're bringing up safety help, trying to do everything they could to stop the bleeding when those three teams in 3 weeks in December ran for 792 yards on the Chiefs. So what happens to Brandon Flowers? He gets put out on an island, and we saw him at its finest. I think he's one of the most underrated cornerbacks in all of football, and I think he is the Chiefs' defensive MVP. And that's no knock on Tomba Hall Lee. Tomba Hall Lee had a fine season. I mean, maybe we can say co-MVP. Maybe we should redo the votes. But to me, Brandon Flowers is the best Chiefs defender. He might even be the best player on this team overall, from an overall standpoint all around. And then comeback player of the year. I didn't think of him in this terms. One of guys on Twitter, Jay Briscoe, said, how can you give it to Brody Croyle? You know, I was thinking injury. Brody Croyle comes off that season-ending injury in 2008, comes into 2009, doesn't even take a snap until training camp. Really is on the verge of probably being released. He's got hot competition with Tyler Thigpen for the backup. Not only does he beat out Tyler Thigpen, he wins Haley over. He starts the season opener for an injured Matt Castle, posts the Chiefs' first 100 or more Raider quarterback rating since 2006, and then he's instrumental in the meeting rooms, in the game planning. He calls a touchdown play to Tim Castile against the Cincinnati Bengals. And Coach Haley at the end of the season announces Brody Croyle in this list of guys for the 2010 season that are our core. So Brody Croyle, to me, is comeback player of the year. Now, if you don't want to go injury, because I was voting on injury, another good one, as Jay Briscoe told me via Twitter, Chris Chambers, pretty good comeback for that guy. Kind of been lost to sea, lost for nothing out in San Diego. Chiefs pick him up off waivers is huge. Steps up big when Dwayne Bowe's out. Now he's an unrestricted free agent. We'll see if the Chiefs can re-sign him. Positional MVPs, we've already talked about the offensive line. We've talked about the tight ends. We've talked about the running backs. This afternoon we'll close out the offense. We'll go with wide receivers and quarterbacks in the blog. Check back on that on kcchiefs.com. Then tomorrow we'll open up the defense. Probably the biggest wave that's been set from people is, why did I pick Rudy Niswonger as my offensive lineman MVP for that positional group? Brad, do you have any idea why I would pick Rudy Niswonger?
I would say Rudy just because he started every game, almost.
He's the only one who started every game.
Every game. He had some injuries. He battled back from those. And
I think he's one of the most underrated guys on this offensive line. And you know what? He may not be a starter. He may not have a role in this team in 2010. It all depends on offseason acquisitions, draft picks, and whatnot. But for 2010, Rudy Niswanger, to me, was the guy who held that offensive line together. There was a time when he went out with a knee injury. It looked like it was going to be serious. Mike Goff was out. Brandon Albert was out. You had Wade Smith stretched out playing left tackle, so you lost your backup there. You had for Goff, you had Allman over there at right guard. I believe Ndukwe was actually inactive that week. So you were down to nothing. Niswanger had to tough it out. He gutted it out. Not only was it not a season-ending injury, he slapped on the brace and he didn't miss a game. He went 16 starts. He calls all the plays on the line for the Chiefs. And yeah, he has a tough job. Sometimes you see him getting blown up into the backfield going up against a guy like Vince Wilfork or someone to that caliber over the course of the season. One of those big, nasty 3-4 nose tackles. And sometimes you see Rudy going back, and that's all people see. But they don't see Rudy taking the leadership roles off the field. You had Brian Waters on a media holdout this year, didn't talk. So when things weren't going so well, those first eight games for the Chiefs' offensive line, when there were no rushing touchdowns, Larry Johnson had 2-point-whatever yards per carry, and the Chiefs were just absolutely abysmal on the ground. Who went in and answered the tough questions on behalf of the offensive line? It was Rudy Niswanger. So I thought Rudy Niswanger had a very good season off the field, and I thought that he was kind of the glue that allowed Jamaal Charles to break out and aided that. And I thought Rudy had a very good season as far as toughness goes. We got a caller here on the line, Jordan from Missouri. Oh, looks like we lost Jordan. Call us back, Jordan, 816-920-4746. We will get you right in. So Rudy Niswanger was my offensive lineman MVP, tight ends MVP. Not much debate there. The guy who leads you in every statistical category. That's Leonard Pope. And then running backs, obviously, Jamaal Charles. So awards week goes on yesterday. Tyson Jackson and Ryan Succop are named to Pro Football Weekly's all-rookie team. Succop, shoo-in. Best rookie kicker statistically since 1970 when the NFL merged with the AFL. There's no better rookie kicker. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, Brad. I didn't know if Pro Football Weekly, when they'd announce their all-rookie team, if they did specials, because they're not always a rookie kicker. That's not a position that turns over. I guess I should say it does turn over a lot in the NFL, but it tends to turn over with, like you saw in Dallas, Nick Folk's out, Shisham's in from, or however you say his last name, from Washington. But it's the same guys, like a guy who didn't make the cut in this past offseason, Billy Cundiff. He services with Baltimore. It's kind of the same, like five guys on hold, and there's not always a rookie kicker. Well, so I didn't know if they'd give an all-rookie team for a kicker, but they did. Ryan Succop, well-deserved. But Tyson Jackson, there is the surprise. He goes sackless, and I got all sorts of feedback. Tyson Jackson, are you serious? Who's voting on this? What in the world is going on? Who would vote Tyson Jackson, a guy who had no sacks, to the all-rookie team? Well, first off, it's voted on. Sounds like we just lost our next caller too, guys. It sounds like we just when you vote on these guys, it's the pro football writers that are voting on these guys. It's not just some guy behind a keyboard. So when you look at it and you think, okay, how did Tyson Jackson get voted onto the all-rookie team? Well, first off, let's take a look at the guys that were voted onto the all-rookie team and where they were. I looked up, I pulled up the statistics of 2009 from the top, from any defensive lineman drafted in the top 50 of the NFL. These are all the defensive linemen. Here are your guys who were the all-rookie team. Tyson Jackson, 14 starts, had 26 total tackles. Sorry, 37 total tackles, no sacks, two passes defensed. He's first team, all-rookie team, the number three overall pick, Tyson Jackson. We know the kind of year he had. Not eye-popping statistics, of course. Todd Haley and Scott Pioli told us it wouldn't be a glamour situation, right, when they drafted him. I remember Russell Maryland was the comparison. Russell Maryland, the first overall pick in 1991, 10 years. His career high over those 10 years of 4.5 sacks actually occurred as a rookie, and he only had 24.5, so just over 2 sacks a season is all that Russell Maryland had over his career. Even though he was a nose tackle, the Chiefs are playing Tyson Jackson in a similar 3-4 role where he doesn't have a lot of opportunities to rush the passer. So, Tyson Jackson, not the best statistics if you're looking at sack totals. But here's the other guys. The 72nd pick overall in the draft, doesn't even in the top 50. He's one of the all-rookie teams. Terrence Knighton, defensive tackle from the Jags. Starts 16 games, 1.5 sacks. Okay. Tackle totals, almost identical. to Tyson Jackson. There's one guy on your all-rookie team. B.J. Raji, the number 9 overall pick, just 6 slots down underneath Tyson Jackson, Green Bay Packers. Raji only starts one game all season, plays in 14, has less tackle totals than Tyson Jackson, and has just 1 sack and 1 pass defense. Not much from B.J. Raji, a top 10 pick. He's first team, all-rookie team. Matt Shaughnessy, defensive end, Oakland Raiders, the 71st pick overall in the draft. Starts just 2 games, plays in 16 overall. Kind of paces the defensive lineman on the all-rookie team with 4 sacks. Nothing eye-popping. His tackle totals overall are underneath Tyson Jackson. So Tyson Jackson's right up there statistically, and some of them better than your 4 guys who joined him on the all-rookie team. So let's tell you about the draft. It takes time for these defensive linemen to develop. Okay, let's take a look at the guys who didn't make the team that were drafted on the D-line in the top 50. The number 11 pick overall last year, Aaron Maben, Buffalo Bills, doesn't start a game all season, has 16 tackles overall, no sacks. 11. Tyson Jackson's 3. There's Maben. There's basically a top 10 pick. Brian Arakpo, number 13. Here's kind of your tweener. He goes into the draft as a defensive lineman, classified as a linebacker. He makes the all-rookie team as a linebacker. He has the best stats of any defensive line / linebacker of all the guys here. 16 games started. He finishes with 11 sacks. Tackle totals were right at 50. So Brian Arakpo, 13th overall pick. There's kind of a flyer. Then we get back into linebackers again. A defensive lineman who entered the league as a D lineman and ended up playing linebacker, the 16th overall pick, Larry English. 2 games started, 2 sacks, had about 30 tackles on the season. Nothing eye-popping right there. Keep going down the first round. The 24th pick overall, the Atlanta Falcons, Perry Ojeri. 2 games played, 2 games started, 1 assisted tackle. There's a first-round pick for you. 32nd pick overall, defensive end from Missouri, Ziggy Hood. No games started, 8 total tackles, 1 sack. There's Ziggy Hood, first-round pick. How many more guys we got? 2 guys to round out the top 50. Everett Brown, defensive end of Carolina. Starts 1 game all season, has about 22 tackles, 23, 2.5 sacks. 2.5 sacks for Everett Brown, defensive end for Carolina. He was the 43rd pick. And the 46th overall pick, Connor Barwin, defensive end for the Houston Texans. Doesn't start a single game. Finishes with 15 tackles. He did have 4.5 sacks, but 15 tackles. So my whole point, there's your defensive lineman drafted in the top 50 of last year's NFL draft. Nothing is eye-popping besides Brian Arakpo, and he played linebacker. He was that Russian quasi-linebacker, kind of basically exactly what Tom Holley played. Very similar to what Holley played. That's what Arakpo played for the Washington Redskins. So you look at that and you think, okay, well, Tyson Jackson was in the top 4 players, rookies overall, on the defensive line. Takes time for these guys to develop, and we're not playing a sexy position. Chiefs fans, I think, are a little bit hard on Tyson Jackson. Obviously, he's not where the Chiefs want him to be right now. He's got a huge offseason ahead of him. But when you're down on a guy like Tyson Jackson, and then you see national writers vote him to the all-rookie team as one of the top 4 defensive linemen, one of the top 2 defensive ends, top 4 defensive linemen in the entire draft the year before, things aren't so bad. Sacks aren't everything. Guys are asked to do different roles, and Tyson Jackson performed his at a level that earned him first-team all-rookie honors. Look at the rest of this all-rookie team. We talked about the defensive linemen. Your linebackers are really your only guys who were the top picks that played the way you think. These are the big names. The linebackers on the all-rookie team. We talked about Arakpo. They had Clay Matthews from Green Bay. He was the 26th overall pick. And Brian Cushing from Houston, the 15th overall pick. That's it. But you go to the DBs. Jacob Lacy, Indianapolis, undrafted. Go to NFL.com. Guarantee you this guy doesn't even have a bio on there. If you go to their draft, not now, but go to like Draft Tracker last year. Type in Lacy, L-A-C-E-Y. See if that guy has a bio. This is a guy who came out of nowhere. Undrafted, first-team all-rookie team. 25th pick, Vontae Davis, Miami defensive back. 42nd, Bird from Buffalo, and Delmas from Detroit was a 33rd pick. So you look there, and Tyson Jackson fell in line where he should. Now, what does he do next? He needs to progress this offseason. It's a huge offseason for Tyson Jackson, but that should give Chiefs fans a little bit of hope for the future with Tyson Jackson in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. We've got Barry from St. Louis on the line. We're talking draft. Barry's talking draft. Let's talk about it, Barry. How you doing, man?
How you doing today, Josh?
I'm doing great. How was your Martin Luther King Day? You get an extended weekend?
Yeah, I sure did, as a matter of fact, and yeah. We all kind of relaxed yesterday, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's what we did over here, too.
Good. I couldn't agree with you more on this argument that you're making toward a lot of these defensive ends and defensive tackles that have, the argument that they're not going to be putting up a ton of numbers at the beginning of their careers, especially.
Right.
Having that discussion over and over again this year about Tyson Jackson has just been exhausting, I think, for a lot of us. And I think that Tyson Jackson is going to be a very, very great cornerstone or piece to this defense in the future. So
I agree.
Just wanted to add to that real quick.
Well, and Barry, it's so surprising. Like, I knew that going in just off the top of my head, I knew that overall that class of defensive linemen didn't put eye-popping stats up. But when you go and actually look and chart it out and look at each one of them and their production compared to Tyson Jackson, they're right on par, and that's even, it's even more surprising than I originally had thought.
Yeah, and Coach Haley has indicated on a couple of instances when he's been asked throughout the season or 2009 season, he was asked about it a couple of times, and on both instances, if I can recall, he basically spoke of that position not very, a sexy position, so to
right.
speak.
Right.
So it is what it is. Now, in my mind right now, I'm kind of concerned about what the direction of the defense is going to be. I believe it's going to be the same scheme. I believe that we're going to continue going in the direction that we're going. But now that we've got this new coordinator, and wow, we've got two great coaches that are additions to our staff this year, so it's very, very exciting.
Right, most definitely. It's been a very exciting start to the 2010 offseason. I think there's going to be more excitement to come, Barry. There were probably phase one of adding coaching talent probably isn't even complete. I'm sure we'll see some new faces. And then phase two, that's the player acquisition. That's where it gets real fun when you get to draft and free agency.
That's right. And, for them to come out of the gate as strong as they did before the playoffs even ended, it just kind of should be a pretty strong indicator to Chiefs fans right now of what they're trying to accomplish. So that's good news for all of us as well. But my first question, obviously, is about Clancy. There's been a lot of speculation on
sure.
what I don't think you're not going to be able to pinpoint this answer, but I would like to discuss it with you. What the direction is going to be with Clancy Pendergrass. Now, my understanding is that now that Romeo Crennel has been hired, as Todd Haley mentioned in his press conference last week, this is going to be a defense that's going to be controlled by Romeo Crennel. It's going to be his decision. So my understanding is if Clancy has a future in Kansas City, that's going to be to the determination of Romeo Crennel.
I would agree to that to an extent, Barry. I think that Haley still has the ultimate say over his coaching staff. And, I think if Romeo says, hey, Clancy is a guy who I want, they're going to try and retain him. And he says, no, he's a guy I don't want on my staff. And obviously, Haley will probably listen to him. Right now, Clancy, the way that I understand it and what I took from the conference call is that the ball's in his court. He's not the defensive coordinator anymore. Haley wants him to stay on as defensive backs coach, which may have been the plan all along if you kind of listen to that conference call they had with Romeo Crennel. That courtship began a year ago. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just over these past 2 weeks. And if you remember when Clancy Pendergrass and Gary Gibbs were hired, no one knew who was going to be defensive coordinator. Why? Well, it makes sense. They were talking to Romeo Crennel. Would Romeo Crennel come in June? And eventually he said, no, I had the hip surgery. I couldn't come. I don't want to do that to you. And then the Chiefs, weeks after, maybe even a month after hiring both Gibbs and Pendergrass, say, okay, Pendergrass is going to be the D coordinator for 2009, and Gibbs will be linebackers coach, and that finally got sorted out. It seems that got sorted out once Crennel said no. So now, who knows what the understanding was going in with Pendergrass, like, hey, it's yours all the way, or we're going to go after Romeo no matter what happens with you. I don't know what happened in between that time, but now that Romeo's here, Clancy's not the DC anymore, but they want him on staff as the defensive backs coach. And to me, the ball's in his court. Does he want to continue with the team in that role, a reduced role? Or maybe that's the role he was going to originally serve all along and he was a holding place. Who knows? I don't know. Those are the private conversations. But I do believe Todd Haley, when he says he wants him and he says, we'll see, there's moving parts, we'll see how it happens. And unless Crennel says absolutely no way Pendergrass stays, then I think that the ball's in Clancy's court as to what he wants to do.
Well, we all know that there's a lot of members, to the media, especially to the doom and gloom side of the media, that have really, really tried hard to put this failure stamp on top of Clancy Pendergrass' forehead, and I just don't see it. I was there in July. I was able to see, and in August as well, I was able to see close up what kind of a coach Clancy Pendergrass is, and quite frankly, I agree. this is a guy that I think did an absolutely great job with the defensive backs this year. And, you know, for one of the other hosts at the other radio station on the other side of town, for them to say that Clancy had no business coaching the defensive backs just makes absolutely zero sense to me.
I tell you what, Barry, to go on that question, you hear a lot of uninformed things. What Clancy Pendergast, he was a DB's coach, but you know who he worked with individually every single day? Mike Brown was under his control, yes. And people want to knock Mike Brown on some of the angles he took and some of the stuff that happened in the secondary. But Clancy Pendergast daily, his position group that he worked with were the corners. Brandon Flowers was this guy tutored under Clancy Pendergast. So when you look at that, I agree. He did a very good job with the corners. And Barry, you know, the statistics aren't there to back up Pendergast's job. I thought he did an admirable job. My most impressive point with him was when they basically scrapped everything over that three-game stretch where teams ran all over the Chiefs. They go to Cincinnati, which is the number three rushing team in the entire NFL, and he changes everything. They're running in different fronts. They're showing 5-2s. Mike Brown's coming in the box. And they basically just changed everything they had done throughout the year for that game specifically to stop the run, and they did it. And that was the most impressive, to me, probably, performance of Clancy. And then it carried over in that Denver game, obviously, too. So I agree that Clancy did what he could with what he had on the field. Now, Romeo Crennel, there's a big name and a name that Chiefs fans are pumped about, and I think everyone in the building is pumped about too. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, but I think also that I agree Pendergast got some unnecessary blame for things that happened during 2009.
He sure did, and I certainly am just going to continue to lean on Coach Haley for what decisions are going to be made, because I believe that Coach Haley wants this guy around, and I believe they're going to make it clear to Clancy that they'd like him to stay. And as fans, I certainly hope us fans can kind of brush our shoulders off of a transition year 2009 season and say, hey, look, this, you know, you don't hire and fire somebody in a year when you're trying to build something special, when you're trying to build something that people want to be a part of. And I think that Clancy deserves to be here and be part of that. So having said that, very good point, and I guess we'll just have to wait until we see what Romeo and what Todd or Coach Todd Haley decides, and we'll go from there.
Yep, very good topic today, Barry. Take care, and
we'll talk to you
next Tuesday. You too, my man. There's Barry from St. Louis there. Some very good points, and he kind of leads us into our second half of the show here, the final 20 minutes. We're going to talk Romeo Crennel, and we're going to talk about how he got to Kansas City, and we just touched on it a little bit there. That courtship began more like 11 months ago. This is, just play the clip, kind of, Brad, of that opening press conference of Romeo talking about how he got to Kansas City, and then we'll talk a little bit about what he had to say.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm excited to be here at Kansas City. I was able to, as Todd said, take a breath last year. You know, I had hip replacement surgery, and when Todd talked to me last year about the possibility of coming, and he was willing to wait however long I felt like I needed, I thought it would be a disservice to him and this program for him to have to wait until basically June, because with hip replacement, they tell you that after 3 months, you should be okay, and I had it in February. So I decided that I would take that deep breath that he mentioned, and so I told him that I wasn't available. And this year, after sitting out for a year, I'm available. That breath has filled my lungs. Enthusiasm is up. Energy is up. My hip is, there's no pain in it. So I feel really good about being able to come in and try to help build this program.
So there you go. Romeo Crennel pretty much had the offer on the table last year. Didn't think it was fair to make Todd Haley wait until June, because that's what would happen. Brad, do you know anyone that's ever had hip replacement surgery? Because that's what Romeo Crennel had.
And, no, I have not.
Okay, it's tough.
I could assume it's rough.
You make a full recovery eventually. You make a full recovery from it. But the rehab that takes 3 to 4 months, it's tough. You got to learn how to walk again. It's a lot of pain. You're walking in canes. So would it really been beneficial for the Chiefs to have Romeo Crennel coming in off of a hip surgery late in June, just before training camp would begin in July, once all the off-season stuff had been blown over? I don't think so. I think it was better that Pendergast came in, implemented the 3-4 scheme. Now it's Romeo's time to put his stamp on the base that the Chiefs will run next year. We'll talk about exactly what it looks like the Chiefs will run next year. It probably won't be the straight-up 3-4 that we saw this year, but it'll be the base of the 3-4. And now Romeo sounds like a guy who's ready to go. And he sounds very beneficial that he can put a full effort out, that he took some time off. And I think it's admirable for him because, you know, he could have made Todd Haley wait until June. But he put the best interest of the team at heart and not necessarily himself, because coaches are coaches. I mean, money's not a thing. He got fired from the Browns. Okay. So did Charlie Weiss from Notre Dame. Did Charlie Weiss take a year off? No. To me, and I guess I don't have the football coach mindset, it would be pretty nice to sit back, go to some beach home, kick back, play golf, and get my buyout pay for a year and then return to the coaching field. You obviously don't have to do it financially. And Romeo Crennel had that drive to coach a year ago. I guarantee it. Just like Charlie Weiss had that drive to immediately return to coaching this year. He had that drive, but he did what was best for the team, for the Kansas City Chiefs, which ultimately became his future employer, and didn't want to kind of hold the Chiefs hostage and in limbo until June. So you got all those camp practices under Pendergast, what you ended up running in 2009. You wouldn't have had that under Romeo Crennel. You wouldn't have had that till probably June. So I thought it was very admirable what Romeo Crennel did, because I guarantee you he wanted to return to coaching. Brad's over there kicking the camera. Sorry for the earthquake shake. We're okay here.
Special effects. My bad.
Special effects. So basically this team can pick up where they left off. When we talk Romeo Crennel and where they're going to pick up this season, I think we're going to see some multiple fronts. I think we're going to see some multiple looks. We're going to see a very versatile defense based in the 3-4. Romeo explained a little bit generically of what they expect for the Chiefs to run in 2010. Let's take a look.
We're going to be based in a 3-4, but we will not be limited to the 3-4. We can do some other things, and which we will. We will mix things up as we need to. You know, each game plan is different, and you have to look at your opponent to see what their strong points are and then what you think you need to do to take away their strengths and then try to take advantage of them that way. Well, I have been some of all of that. You know, but like I mentioned before, we're going base out of the 3-4. I mean, I've gone into games where we've gone in and played 70% zone, and I've gone into games where we've gone in and played 70% man. So it just depends on what the game plan is for that particular opponent. But like you say, basically, it's going to be a combination of zone and man going in. Now, how much we pressure, how much we don't pressure, depends on the game plan primarily.
So there you go, multiple front, 3-4. What does it mean? It means look at Romeo Crennel's past. Most people think he's just 3-4. Now, he ran a 4-3 for a long time. The Patriots didn't switch to the 3-4 fully until 2003 after they missed the playoffs in 2002. What happened? 03-04, Super Bowl champions. That's really when Romeo Crennel got on the map as a defensive coordinator, when his name became hot. And ultimately, obviously, him and Weiss both take head coaching jobs at the same time, are fired in similar years, and now find themselves in Kansas City running both the offense and defense. But when you look at multiple fronts, it depends on the versatility of the players. And that's what Crennel's biggest, probably most difficult job is going to be, evaluating the personnel. What can guys play? What can they do? Because you don't want to ask a player to do what they can't. And what Crennel wants to do, that ultimately is going to determine where the Chiefs go in free agency defensively, where they go in the draft defensively, because he's got to look at the personnel and say, okay, you know, this guy, Derek Johnson, can play inside backer as a nickel, but we're not comfortable with him playing every single down in base. Or maybe he's going to say, Derek Johnson can be my base inside backer and he's going to start for me. I'm comfortable with what we're asking him to do in that inside linebacker position. So there you go. Which way will the Chiefs go there? Same thing goes with your strong safety, with your free safety, with your line. The line is where it all starts. And there's guys like Vince Wilfork out there that have people salivating. Who knows where the Chiefs will go defensively, but you've got two young bookends on the end. Probably need to get yourself a nose tackle. And then from there, it depends on the versatility and what guys can do. Do you want to play more man? Do you want to play zone? Well, Romeo said they might do a bit of both. So in your secondary, he's going to look for guys who are comfortable playing both. And he's going to look for backups who can sub in a package where we're going to play man up and we're going to blitz the hell out of this team. So I want I'm just throwing names out there. Maurice Leggett to man up on the slot in this situation. But when we go zone, I'm more comfortable with Brandon Flowers or Brandon Carr playing in that zone spot in a nickel, and I'll put somebody else on the corner. Those are the type of things that Romeo Crennel is going to have to figure out, and those are going to be the types of things that are most difficult for him. And that's ultimately going to determine the Chiefs' direction this offseason. It's going to draft, which a lot of people here are talking about in the Chiefs forum. I see from Chiefs Rule says, Will Fork, please. Hey, that's going to be the number one guy that the Patriots try to re-sign. That dude is a beast. And, yeah, I agree. Will Fork, please. He'd look pretty darn good, man, in that middle here in Kansas City. A guy like that is what Chiefs fans really want. In the middle, and you know what? There's nothing against Big Ron. Big Ron is that guy who is probably supposed to be a backup every year he's here and ends up starting somehow. And if Big Ron returns next year and he fits, I think Chiefs fans would love to see him on the field for 20 snaps a game, rotating with some big truck like a Will Fork who's playing 40 snaps a game. And there you go. I think the Chiefs would be very effective. Ron had to step out of his shell when Tank Tyler got traded away. And Ron Edwards, a big man like Ron Edwards, was playing sometimes over 50 snaps a game. That is tiring. Even if Ron dominates for two out of those three plays until he gets tired, 50 snaps for a nose tackle over 330 pounds, that's asking a lot of a guy. And Ron, I thought, did an admirable job considering how thin the Chiefs were at that nose tackle. But I think all Chiefs fans know that finding a big man in the middle, maybe put Ron in a complimentary role, would be very good for this Chiefs team. Think about the 3-4 defense. 2009 was the first time that the 3-4 had been here in Kansas City since 1991. Defensive coordinators who've gone through the 4-3. Gunther Cunningham didn't work out. Clancy Pendergast in 2009, the 3-4, didn't work out. Kurt Schottenheimer, Dave Adolph, Greg Robinson. There's five right there. I think that's the five. That takes us down to 91 when the Chiefs were running the 3-4 exclusively. Guess who the defensive coordinator was? A man by the name of Bill Cowher was your defensive coordinator in 91. Bill Cowher, yeah, Brad's doing the face. Pretty damn good job Bill Cowher did. How did he do it running the 3-4? He did it with Neil Smith, Big Dan Saliamua, and Bill Moss as his three defensive linemen. That's what the Chiefs need to develop into to be successful running the 3-4. Past that, everything works itself out on second and third level. You can fill guys in, you can package guys in, but you need the base. Bill Cowher went on, obviously, to win Super Bowls. Today, even though he's been out of football, what has it been, 2 years now, 3 years? You're from Pittsburgh, Adam, 3 years? This will be his third season coming up if he's out, right? He's been out the last two, four? He's still one of the hottest coaching candidates off the market. A lot of that had to do with that defensive line he had in Kansas City in 1991 running the 3-4. Big Dan, Neil Smith, and Bill Moss. So phase one has been implemented in Kansas City, adding coaching talent. I don't think we're done. Let's hear what Coach Haley has to say about adding coaches, adding players, and the two being mutually beneficial to one another.
Well, again, Adam, this was about adding good coaches, and that's been the number one goal going back to last year at this time of year, or a little later than this time even. And you've got to, and I think this is fact, you know, you need players to win the big game, and you need coaches. You can't do it with just one or the other. If you just have good players and you don't have coaches that are capable of getting the job done, then you're probably not going to win the games that you want to win, and vice versa. If you just have coaches and you don't have players, then probably the same results. So I know that you have to have both. We're in the process already of working on the player side, and we're obviously right in the middle of the coaches addition here and while we're talking today. But I know that Coach here is a guy, again, I have a great amount of respect for, that has the resume to back it up, has been part of, as he just spoke about, turning organizations around, turning teams that haven't been able to win enough games into teams that win enough games to make everybody happy, which is what will make us happy, is winning the big game. So there's
phase one. The Chiefs have implemented. I've called it phase one. Haley doesn't. say add coaching talent. Phase two is add player talent. It's where it gets fun. Hey, we're going to be at the Senior Bowl next week here on KCChiefs.com. We'll be bringing you up to date with all the guys working out down at the Senior Bowl. Tim Tebow will be there. You ever heard of him, Brad? You ever heard of Tim Tebow?
Isn't that that quarterback who looks like you?
Tim Tebow will be at the Senior Bowl. So maybe I'll get a picture taken next to him, see what happens. He'll morph me. With
Please do.
His neck will be the size of my thigh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll be in the Senior Bowl and kind of giving you guys a preview of phase two of what the Chiefs will be doing. But I don't think phase one's over yet. Barry brought up a good point. Romeo Crennel is going to have some say in his defensive staff. And we've told that, for instance, Gary Gibbs is going to return as a linebackers coach. But there are reports out there yesterday that he was a candidate to become defensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins. He's worked with Parcells before. So if something like that happens, the Chiefs will have to go out and get another guy. There may be a little bit more coaching turnover still to come. We'll have to see. But I think phase one is closing down a little bit. It's at least slowing for the Chiefs. They splashed with the two big hires to start off 2010. And then that's where it gets interesting. It's about the guys who play on the field. It's like Haley just said. You can have all the best coaches in the world. We can bring in all the Hall of Fame coaches, but if you don't have the players, it doesn't matter. You need players, you need coaches, and they have to respond to one another and work together. I think Rex Ryan in the Jets is a perfect example of that. You've got a defensive mind with a good defensive team. They're buying in to each other, and they find themselves in an AFC championship game. Say what you want about how they got in the playoffs. They're obviously one of the hottest teams right now in the game. Rex Ryan, defensive coach, very well respected, has good defenders. They're running what he wants to run. They're top defense in the league. So there's a good example of that. The new leader in town for this Chiefs defense is Romeo Crennel. And I don't know a lot about him. I really don't. I just know about him from the Cleveland Browns. And I'm not talking about what I know about him as a football coach. I know his background. I know what he runs. I understand the multiple front and his background. I'm talking about as a person, what he's like, what it's like being around him. I've called people in the league that I don't have many people. I don't know many people in Cleveland that have been around and could give me any insight into what we expect. So Todd Haley talked about that, Crennel and his leadership, and what people, Chiefs fans, who will be around Romeo will come to know him for. Let's take a listen.
Well, again, until you guys will see, you know, those that haven't been around him, I mean, Romeo is a great presence, has great leadership qualities. You can hear his voice. I mean, I've told Romeo that even after we all kind of broke up there in New York, that there were many a days that I was put in situations and thought, you know, how would Romeo have reacted to this or coached in this situation? And he's that kind of a presence, and again, just one that really excited to have aboard and really honored, again, that he had many other opportunities to think about, and the fact that he'd come work with us and for me is a great honor, again, because he's a guy that I really look up to and I know I'll be able to lean on in a lot of different situations, as I do, you know, a bunch of my other coaches.
Well, there you go, Roman Crennel. We're going to find him as a leader, and he'll probably grow on us once he gets back from this East-West game, and we can, after the Super Bowl, when he starts full circle and the Chiefs fans see him talking and get to know him, I think that I'm excited to get to know him at least, and I think Chiefs fans are as well. Tim Machen here in Cover Live. She said a good point. The Jets prove you can win with basic football. And that's the type of football I like. The best teams to me, the ones that are continually dominant, can run the football, and they'll hit you in the mouth. And in the college game, and even now it's trickled down in the high school game, and it's starting to trickle into the pro game to where they say power football is dead. It's over. You spread them out. I can't think of a way not to curse because I have a word that I call it. Something-something football. But it's about tricking people, and it's called trick-something football. And Gunther Cunningham used to say it actually a lot. But
he used to say a lot of things you probably shouldn't be saying on the show.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm trying to frame it. Anyway, they say that the power football game is dead, and you can still win playing basic football, turning around, handing it off, having an effective quarterback. I mean, look at Mark Sanchez. This is exactly what you want a rookie quarterback to do. He had his stretches, like any rookie quarterback should, where he goes down and threw a bajillion picks during the season. But now in the playoffs, he's managing games, and he's allowing the run and defense to carry the Jets to where? Oh, the Lamar Hunt Trophy. They might get a chance to take that home and hoist it over their heads this weekend. And I wouldn't put past him beating Peyton Manning. And this is going to be a good matchup. Where does football lie? The AFC Championship game. You've got spread it out football with one of the best quarterbacks in the game. They don't rely much on a run game, going up against an excellent defense and a team who plays completely opposite offensively as Indianapolis. It's going to be a great game to me. The Jets, say what you want about the Colts resting their starters. They won that game. They get a chance to go and win another one. And I think it'll be a great game of two different brands of football, kind of your old 3 yards in a cloud of dust game. You love it when I go with that voice, don't you, Brad? And then obviously you air it out with Peyton Manning and the air attack. So I'm looking forward to that game much more than I am to the Brett Favre New Orleans Saints games, because Breeze and Favre is a sexy game that I think everyone nationally is looking forward to. To me, I want to see if the Jets can keep it up. Rex Ryan's really impressed me, by the way. Can you tell, Brad? The way he's talked, the way he got his team prepared for this playoffs. I mean, the players love him, obviously. He's telling them, hey, he charted out their playoff run all the way to their Super Bowl parade beforehand. And some people say, oh, what confidence. You're a wild card team that snuck in because teams laid down the stretch. Okay, now you're in the AFC Championship game. So take it for what it's worth.
Jim Rome said it best. The New York Jets lead the NFL in three categories. Defense, rushing offense, and swagger.
Swagger. The Jets got swagger.
They have an attitude, and that Rex Ryan has this attitude, and all these young players are believing in the guy, and it's you could do about anything when
I swear Rex Ryan is the reason Nate Kading finally missed a kick inside 40 yards. It's Rex Ryan.
Terrifying.
Are you seeing the amount of energy, that guy comes? And Todd Haley has that. You watch the Chiefs start winning, you're going to see some of that, because when Rex Ryan sees that kick go wide, he's running out there, fist pumping, jumping up with players. And you see a little bit about that with Haley when the Chiefs are winning. Now, the Jets have done a lot more winning than the Chiefs. But Haley's an emotional guy. And, some of the yelling on the sidelines is going to turn into some celebration. You saw some hugs with Bo. You saw some fist pumps. When you win, you feed off the energy. We talked a little bit about it last week with Bo Pelini in Nebraska and Todd Haley being similar type guys to where they're emotional. And when you're winning, like Bo Pelini, you say, that's awesome. That's the way to go. And when you're losing, you'll get critics to say, hey, this guy needs to settle down a bit. Well, Rex Ryan, I think, is just as fiery as any coach out there, and they're winning, and people love him.
And the media in New York love him. If it's hard to make anybody love you, the media in New York just absolutely eat this guy up, which is...
And the media in New York's loving Mark Sanchez now. And if you remember in the middle...
He was the first four games, yeah. And then they wanted to run him out of town.
And now he's the greatest thing since Ben Roethlisberger led the Steelers to a Super Bowl in his rookie season. All right, let's get one more thing here to close out the show. We talked about Clancy Pendergast and his status a little bit. I said what I thought, that it looked like the ball was in his court. We'll hear what Todd Haley had to say. I'll let you draw your own conclusion as to where Clancy Pendergast might fit in. Here's Todd Haley going on record as Clancy Pendergast is still a member of the Chiefs organization, just not defensive coordinator. Where will he be here in the future? Will he not? Here's what Todd Haley had to say.
Well, I would imagine he'd be coaching a position again. We're in transition right here. I shouldn't say transition. We're adding another guy to the mix, and Romeo's going to be in charge of the ultimate defense. But every one of those guys plays a critical role. And I'm fortunate enough that I last year and now this year I have a bunch of guys that have run the defense before. They've been coordinators. Some of them that have been head coaches. Romeo being one of those. So to me, if the fit is good and I know everybody can work together to the common goal, then you got a chance to succeed, and that's really what's going on right now.
But you haven't picked.
All right, one more topic here, because I say next week we'll let you know what time the show's going to come on. We may be from Mobile, we may not. We may just do a transaction Thursday and recap our time. KCChiefs.com will be in Mobile. We'll be giving you video updates from the Senior Bowl, and the blog will be running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Those are the big days for evaluation. You'll have the GMs there. You'll have player personnel people there. And we'll see if we can set up live in Mobile. May not be real friendly for us there, but we will have a live show next week for sure, even if it's on Thursday when we recap our week and all the things we learned there. We may just move to Thursday at noon. So look on KCChiefs.com for that. Speaking of the draft, via the NFL, right before the show, 53 players were granted special eligibility for the 2010 draft. That basically means these are underclassmen who meet the three-year requirement and have renounced their NCAA eligibility. There's some big names locally for you regional Chiefs fans here. I won't read through the whole list. You can probably go and find it online. But guys like Sam Bradford, Desmond Briscoe, Des Bryant, Dominique Franks, Jermaine Grisham, Gerald McCoy, Joshua Moore from K-State, those are all some underclassmen who and someone had some injury and whatnot. But they're guys who had to get special eligibility requests from the NFL, all of them granted. They cannot come back to the college game. List them on KCChiefs.com. And I'm being told, I'm sorry, B. Pierce, to end this show, one of our good followers here in on the blogs and on the forums and here in Cover It Live, my man Pierce, asked, can we play the Miley Cyrus Jamal Charles TD dance?
Possibly. I'm going to try
and
this.
And Brad's trying. We're going to close out the show with it. Barring technical difficulties, Brad, do you need me to fill a minute for you right here as you get it ready?
Pierce, this one's for you.
Pierce, this one's for you, buddy. See everybody later. Is it working?
It's Charles. Has a hole and more. Stays on his feet. Sprints inside, and he caps off a brilliant day, Jamar Charles.
Chop it up with the Chiefs. And what a-